Okay, that's not a point of order, but...
It's also irrelevant. It's no more of a point of order than Serene's was.
Okay, so Lawrence, go ahead.
Yeah, well, my point of information is, and it's in the form of a question, why isn't the KPFC receiving CPB money?
Nobody's receiving.
Right, nobody is. Isn't there a specific reason, Teresa, that the station's not getting any CPB money?
I think you need to talk to our CFO about that.
Okay, Maria Elena, you want to answer Michael's question? Lawrence's question.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Number one, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting has a very specific requirement with regard to renewal of the grant, and that means. And here comes somebody rustling papers again. I could barely hear myself speak. In any event. The CPB has put into their requirement, you can find it on the internet, that a station must reach at least one day out of its broadcasting year 40% of the minorities, which according to the United States Census Bureau, reside within its primary broadcasting area. And KPFT has failed to do that. And has failed to do that for a number of years. And most recently, during the past 2 years, it has failed to do that because of the impaired transmission, which now is somewhere between 30% and 50% broadcasting capacity of its full 100% broadcasting capacity. But long story short is this. CPB, or the Corporation for Public Broadcasting that gives out these grants, has already stated they do not intend to renew in 2014 our grant money. And we've been discussing this since I first came on the board in January of 2013. And by the way, none of the statements that I've made are erroneous. I have always couched any statement I've made regarding the underperformance of KPFT's management in the context of facts.
Okay. I'm sorry. Who was next on the stack? Who would like to speak?
Well, this is Teresa. I would like to say something.
Okay. Well, who was the other voice?
Hank, after Teresa.
Okay. Teresa and then Hank.
Bob,
There are too many things I'd like to respond to that we have time for. So if anyone would like to hear my response to the claims that Maria Elena Castellanos just made, please call me personally. I'd be happy to discuss it with you.
Okay, Bob, we're basically out of time here.
Okay. Is there a motion to extend?
Yeah, this is Hank. I have a motion to extend 5 minutes.
Okay. Is there any objection?
Okay, that will take us to, whatever it is. It's 6:50 in California. It's,
I object.
It leaves us, whatever.
I object to the extension.
Okay, so because there's an objection, we have to go to a vote. This is a non-debatable motion. So the motion is to extend this item for 5 minutes. And then after that, of course, we would go back to the agenda and the other items. So, Michael.
Point of information,
yes.
Bob, what is this agenda item? Because we seem to be all over the place
the
about
timeline.
Okay,
for the elections.
We're not all over the place.
Okay. So, Michael, would you please call the roll? And a yes means you want 5 minutes extension. A no means you don't want a 5 minute extension.
Everybody clear? Yes, is extends for 5 minutes. Teresa Allen.
Allen says yes.
Okay. Jim Brown.
Yes.
Maria Elena Castellanos.
No.
Mark Hernandez. Mark Hernandez still on? No. All right. Cynthia Johnson?
Yes.
Kim Kaufman?
Pass.
Janet Coburn left the call. Hank Lamb? Hank Lamb?
Yes.
Bob Lederer?
Yes.
Have you been on the call, Lawrence Reyes?
Yes.
I guess I'll go, yes, Michael Novick. Serene Roberts?
Yes.
Richard Zell?
Yes.
Margie Wilkinson?
Yes.
Jane Zara, still on?
This is Marilena. I withdraw my objection for the sake of facilitating going on with this meeting. So I withdraw the objection. Let's go ahead and extend it 5 minutes and take care of it.
I'm going to extend it anyway, so.
Okay. All right. I think Hank was next on the stack.
Yeah, two things. One, could whoever was working on the timeline last year bring that or send it to us so that we can look at it for maybe a template for this year and, maybe offer suggestions on what the dates should be. And two, does anybody really think we're going to get the CPB money anywhere at this time?
Does someone have an answer?
Michael Lovett to the stack.
Go ahead.
Michael Lovett to the stack.
Yes.
Our general manager said, the interim general manager, KPFK, said that he didn't think that even if we got all the budget information in time, the audit information, that we would fit within the timeline by which time the grants would have been.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. By which time what?
They still need to do an audit meeting in June, and there's some impression that the CPB money might not come through in time, even if we got that audit in. So I think that we can't rely on the CPB money. Also, several of the stations are in the process of losing the CPB money, as was described earlier. There's a situation at KPSK also. So. I think we need to look at cost cutting. We need to, I'll just say in terms of the timeline that last year the Elections Committee proposed numerous alternative timelines as the dates slipped on the election. And so there were two or three that we came up with that fit within the bylaws requirements for time periods between different events on the timeline. But none of them were ever adopted by the PNB. So the last one, really, that might apply is one that Bob already circulated from 2012.
So could they send one of those out? I mean, if they're all within the timeline, the bylaws?
We submitted at least two alternative timelines last year that never got voted on by the PNB, and then the PNB voted to postpone elections for an entire year but didn't set a timeline for it.
Right. Could we just get one of those for this committee's use?
We can repost them again. I'm saying that what Bob said earlier, I think, applies that the one that we actually followed in 2012 might be the closest to what the current situation is. But I'll find them and repost them to the list.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Serene, please.
Serene, go ahead.
Okay, so I gather we're not actually going to decide on a timeline to be offered tonight?
Well, it's up to the committee, but it doesn't sound like we're quite ready.
Point of information.
Then, sorry.
Hang on, Maria Lynn. Go ahead, Serene.
Is there anything else on the agenda?
Yes. I can just read what's left. We have next steps on cost-cutting measures and drafting an RFP for balloting and tabulation services, which we had allocated 30 minutes. We're clearly running out of time. Next item was report back on PNB action on election committee motions regarding membership list cleanup and other motions and possible next steps, and then setting our next date, which clearly we need to do sooner than later.
Okay. I think we're probably close to out of time, so I won't move on to the next item because I know Mary Elena has a question. But if there's much beyond that, I really would like us to just move on and get something done that we can actually do tonight.
This is Margie.
Okay. I heard Maria Elena first and then Margie.
Thank you.
Oh, my question is whether or not you could send to us rather soon the copy of the 2012 timeline that you have.
I sent it a few minutes ago.
Did you tack it on to the reminder?
No, I sent a new email with that only the 2012 timeline.
Okay, I'll double check my spam filter. Thank you.
Okay,
it didn't come through. Go ahead.
Okay,
that's going to the Civic Elections Committee list on Yahoo. So if you're not on it, you probably didn't get it.
Right, but yeah,
I can forward it. I'll forward it to Maria Elena.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so Margie was next.
So I want us to think about the idea of scheduling an extra meeting of this committee so that we don't have to wait until the end of June and our June meeting to talk about how to get this timeline on the agenda for the PMB.
Okay. Let me ask before we get to that point. Seems to me that as happened when we did the timeline 2 years ago, we needed a working group to kind of work out the nuts and bolts, and it's not very efficient to have an 18-person committee work out those details. So is there anyone here who would volunteer between now and whenever? And the next question on the table is when will we gather again? But whenever, you know, in the next few weeks to come up with a suggestion for a timeline, perhaps using the 2012 as a jumping-off point. So you don't have to construct from scratch.
Okay. Serene volunteers. And does someone have KPFTX up?
I have KPFTX up, yes.
Unless there's a conflict, I'm proposing 2 weeks from tonight.
Okay, hold that thought for 1 minute. I just want to see who else would volunteer. So we have Serene.
I'm willing to work, and I worked on it last time with Betty Rosen when she was a
member. Who else?
Margie's willing to help, although I'm madly busy. But I'm very anxious about this subject. So.
Sure. Anyone else who wants to?
This is Cynthia. I from KPFA. I have to sign out for a little while, but I'll get back on, and I'd also like to support the other people on working on this timeline.
Are you saying you want to work on it too, or not?
Well, yes, it's not as the main person, but follow along.
Okay, one of the people. Okay, great.
Okay, thank you.
This is Lawrence. I'd like to volunteer as well. There isn't already too many people on the committee.
Okay. All right.
Who is that?
And Maria Elena.
Okay, so...
Hang on, one at a time. Bob, I'm trying to take notes. There was a man who volunteered before Maria Elena. Could that person repeat who it was?
Jim Brown.
Thank you. It was Lawrence, I believe.
Lawrence. Do you have room for Richard?
Okay, Margie's going to drop off. You guys can do it. It'll be fine.
Okay. All right, so... would one of you step forward to be the convener of this call to work?
I'm not stepping forward to be convener, but did you get Richard down on the list?
I have Jim Graham.
I'm volunteering Michael, and I think we now have seven people.
And that's enough.
Michael, is that okay? Will you convene the call?
I would rather not be the convener of the call. I'm willing to send people all the prior versions of the timeline.
I'll convene it.
Okay.
Do we have seven people?
Serene.
Yeah.
We have...
I just want to verify the names.
I have Cynthia Johnson, Serene Roberts, myself, Maria Elena Castellanos, Jim Brown, Lawrence Reyes, and Richard Uzzell.
Right.
Seven. Good. Great.
Okay. Very good. Thanks, everyone. So now, with that in mind, Serene, can you repeat your proposal for the next committee meeting?
Assuming it's available 2 weeks from tonight.
Okay, hang on, I'll pull up the calendar.
Is that June 3rd?
Yeah.
June 3rd is still open on the calendar.
Snatch it.
I'm trying to think. I believe, that would be simultaneous with the PNB's governance meeting.
No.
Well,
governance,
it's
not on
up.
The calendar. It's not happening.
Wow, then I must have, because I know that there was a deadline on the 2nd, June 2nd, and then I thought there was something happening with regard to the governance meeting on June 3rd.
Okay,
then.
Well,
I could be wrong.
You may be right.
If someone
has a meeting and they don't calendar it, they don't have the date.
Yeah, if so, someone could call George real quick and find out.
Well, I'll do that. I'll do that real quick and come back on.
All right. So while we're waiting for that, let's move on to other things. And we will definitely return to the question of the date. I will not forget.
Just to say, Thursday the 29th is also open.
Okay, but that's a lot less than 2 weeks.
No, that's May 29th. Yeah, that's less than 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay, so let's hold this until Lawrence gets back. So why don't we move on to the next steps on cost cutting. Michael, you had volunteered, if I recall, to check with your local League of Women Voters about the possibility of them doing it.
I'm sorry to say I never got that done. I did come up with a list of a couple of places. I'll have to dig it out again. There were,
Would you have time in the next few weeks to follow up?
Yeah, I will. I will say that as far as I can tell, the one in LA is the only one that offers that. I did look at the League of Women Voters and other cities that we're in, and none of them said they offered election supervision services.
Okay. Except L.A., right?
Except L.A., yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you'll try to pursue that and bring us back whatever you find out. Okay. Now, the other thing that was mentioned before Maria Elena got on the committee, someone else had said, well, why don't we go to local universities? So I don't think, someone can speak up right now if any of that contacting happened. Does anyone know? I don't think it did. But that's another direction people could go to try to see what free or low-cost services might be available. Does anyone have thoughts?
I have a question, a point of information. Maria Elena here?
Yes.
The question is this, since we're talking about, single ballot?
Single transferable voting.
Single transferable voting. It really isn't that complex once you have an opportunity.
Hello, this is Lauren.
Okay, hang on 1 second, Lawrence. Just finish your thought, Maria Elena.
The question is whether or not that might be something that can be put together in a statement that explains to the retired professor or even acting professor, I don't know, and any of the poli-sci courses that are required to get a BA degree. I mentioned to them there'd be an opportunity for them, if they're not familiar with single transferable ballot, the historical nature and the democratic nature of it. Because right now, with Citizens United and a whole bunch of other McCutcheon kinds of Supreme Court decisions, there's not a whole lot of democracy left in terms of your vote meaning anything when, corporations can buy the votes for a congressman. But on the other hand, here we have single transferable voting, which means not only does your ballot count with regard to your first choice, but also it carries over and has some impact on your second and third choices. So I just thought that there might be a statement put together that mentions that uniqueness of how democratic governance of Pacifica is carried out.
Okay. All right. So let's take a break and go back to Lawrence about the date question. Lawrence, did you reach George?
Oops, Lawrence is.
I'm sorry. I was on mute and I was talking. So the meeting is on the 3rd, and he's going to post it right now. He forgot to post it. So.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you for checking. All right, so alternate proposals for our next meeting date.
The 2nd, the 9th, and the 10th are also open.
Yeah.
Okay, so Monday the 2nd, Monday the 9th, or Tuesday the 10th.
The 9th is going to be taken soon.
Okay. Okay. So,
well, let's do the 2nd.
Yeah, does anyone have a problem with Monday, June 2nd?
When's the holiday?
Memorial Day
is preceding weekend.
The weekend before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So any objections to Monday, June 2nd?
No, it's a good idea.
I have an objection. I just remembered I have another organizational meeting on that day, a steering committee meeting of another organization. Is there any possibility other than that?
Tuesday the 3rd.
No, that's
the
governor.
That's governor.
Oh, the 3rd is fine. Tuesday the 10th.
Okay. How about Wednesday?
I want to object to the 10th. I'm sorry. We have LSB. Three stations have LSB meetings in the second week. And at least for me, that is quite enough, especially because I think programming is going to be meeting on the 9th.
Yes.
Mm. Right. Okay. Well,
this is impossible. We can't wait until – we just can't wait later than that.
Right. So we just need to decide.
What about that Friday?
I'm sorry. What did you say, Maria?
What about that Friday?
Friday the 6th?
Right.
Friday, people?
I can say historically in this committee and other committees I've been on at Pacifica that it's very poor attendance on Fridays in general.
People have lives.
Yeah.
Thursday the 29th is open.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Thursday, May 29th is open.
Which is 10 days from now. I think we should do that.
Not quite 10.
I agree with May 29th.
I think we should do it, just because we've got to get this
29th, yeah,
straightened out.
Okay. Is there any concern or objection about Thursday, May 29th?
I have a question. What is the Thursday after that? What date is that, and what is there a meeting? Is there a conflict?
The 5th, and there's something scheduled. It's the KPFK
outreach. That's not on the stream, though. That's just the committee meeting. It could be the 5th.
It's also 2 hours after this committee meets, right? Because you guys meet at 7 o'clock or 7.
Oh, yeah,
7,
yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're right, 10 p.m. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I take it.
To end by 10 p.m.
Right.
Thursday, okay. June 5th.
Yeah, so any objection to Thursday, June 5th?
I can't do the 5th at all.
That's Jim Brown?
Mm-hmm. It's just Jim Brown, but I'm only one person, so.
Right. Now, ultimately, we may have to pick a day where somebody cannot do it, so let's make a decision. We have...
we can do the 29th. That's fine.
Right. Is there any objection to Thursday, May 29th?
Yes.
Who was that saying?
No,
yes?
I'm not objecting. I'm cheering.
That was celebration.
Okay. All right. Then, without objection, that's our next meeting, Thursday, May 29th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern.
Great.
Okay. All right.
I think it would be helpful if we can have the working group meeting before that, so
yes,
if Serene can figure out a time. And,
we're going to have a Monday brunch, folks.
Okay.
Maybe that can be another Friday.
All right. So let's go back to the discussion of cost cutting. So who would like to speak? And by the way, let me throw in a piece of information. We did have a request for proposals that led to the hiring of Election Services Corporation last time to do the balloting and tabulation, which meant that they composed the ballot, mailed it out, fielded all the phone calls of people who didn't get their ballots and then sent them replacement ballots, and then they did the actual tabulation process. That turned out to be a very expensive process. It was more expensive than Pacifica had ever paid before for those services. And then separately, of course, we had a national election supervisor. So that was, I guess, the first time, or maybe it was the second time, that we had split up into two the functions that had previously been handled by a national election supervisor themselves. So it's just a little historical note. I will locate the RFP that we put out and send it to everyone so you have a clear sense of what the required tasks are. Okay.
Great.
So
thank
go
you.
Ahead to whoever, who would like to speak.
Well, do we, this is Hank.
Yeah, go ahead, Hank.
Do we want to rejoin those two to cut costs?
Can you
just
say more about what you mean?
Well, have the National Election Supervisor do more preparing the ballots, et cetera, and have the company do the tabulations, collections, and all that.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, this is Margie.
Yes.
I know this might be an unpopular idea, but I think we should think about going back to having each station handle its own elections. I didn't think handling elections nationally made very much sense. I wasn't very pleased with it last year, and I don't think it's necessarily a good idea. What I'm saying is that I think we need to think about, well, anyway, I think we need to think about both the question of using electronic format and also the question of having the stations do the elections themselves instead of having it done nationally by some outfit that we don't have control over. Anyway.
Maria Elena on the set.
Okay. Maria Elena, let me just ask Margie a clarifying question.
Yes.
So when you say have the stations do it themselves, you're talking about the tabulation, right? Because there's never been...
No, talked about...
Hang on. There's never been a separate station formulation of local ballots. That's always been done centrally. Up until the last election, if memory serves, it was done by the NES, him or herself. But it was the NES, not the LESs. So they had the identical format and wording and things like that. So is that what you're just saying the tabulation returned to the local?
Well, maybe I'm misremembering, but when I ran in 2010, didn't we send out the ballots from here? I mean, they were sent out by...
They were sent locally, but they were designed and printed nationally.
That's right.
What I'm saying.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yes.
Right. Okay.
They were designed and printed by the... Whatever.
By the NES
and then sent out and retrieved locally.
Right.
So that each station had a different mailbox that they
That's right. That's right.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Richard to the SAG.
That's all I'm talking about.
Okay. I'm sorry, who before Richard?
Richard.
No, Maria I heard
Elena.
You Richard. Maria Lane.
Oh.
Yeah, and then Richard.
Okay. Then Michael.
Okay, so Maria Elena, Richard, and then Michael. Go ahead, Maria.
I think we need more information, definitely, with regard to exactly what the cost is for electronic balloting and how that fits into the entire steps in the procedure that are handled or would be handled by a contracted company. The thing is, if there's too much. If there are too many of these steps are left to the individual stations, then those we're opening ourselves up to lack of homogeneity in the quality of the conducting and neutrality of the conducting of the election process and counting of it. Unless we had the individual stations swap so that one station is counting the ballots of a different station. What I'm trying to see is to make sure that we don't prejudice the process in any way that might unnecessarily allow any kind of bias to spill over from a station's management or even own LSB in the tabulation of the ballots. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Richard?
When y'all were first talking about it, I was thinking y'all weren't talking about electronic at all. It seems to me like when the NES is hired, a lot of this should be their responsibility to put these things together. The electronic, all these voting services, whichever one we choose, do electronic stuff all the time, more so than the paper. That's from what I've heard from them. So when we get to that point, the NES, it seems to me like, needs to be the person making the decisions, and it seems to me like that's what the bylaws call for. Thank you.
Okay. Michael?
You know, I think briefly the argument for electronic voting is that a major cost of the election is the printing and postage for mailing out ballots. So I think that's why that came up from the PNB. I think that other major cost that people addressed previously is the fact that when the election does not reach quorum, that there is, extensions, and the extensions end up in additional salary for the local election supervisors. And then finally, on the question of tabulation or anything else, the whole point of hiring the national election supervisor and the local election supervisor is to have people in charge of the elections who have no axe to grind in the election. So it's not the management or the local station board having anything really to do except to make sure the list, that the management has the responsibility to make sure the lists are accurate. And then the supervisors will check that over. So I think those are some of the factors at play. The other thing about trying to get volunteer supervisors is that the responsibility of the supervisor is primarily about, at this point, unless we change it, is primarily about enforcing the regulations for the election, not so much about balloting, doing SUV balloting.
Okay, well, but let me point out that in prior years before we hired an election firm, that person also had to supervise the replacement ballot process, which is very time-consuming, where the listeners call in or the voters call in and say, I didn't get my ballot, please send it to me. So
yeah, but that's because we have never solved the problem of getting a clean list.
Right. No, I understand, but I'm just saying that, you know, even with some cleanup efforts, it's inevitably going to be a chunk of time, hopefully less time than it's been, but it's just something to keep in mind as we're planning, you know, how to reorganize. Okay, anyone else want to speak on this?
Bob, I apologize. I sort of lost track of where we are in terms of time.
Well, we had said 30 minutes, which would take us to the 10:30.
Okay. So
it's 15 minutes left.
Right.
Although we don't have to take up all the time if we think
like
we just need to look at the materials that various ones of us are going to post and, you know, get the working group on its process and maybe end this for tonight. But, Michael, you want
Michael,
to?
Michael, the stack. Well, I did want to say
stack.
Okay.
Three for the stack.
All right. Michael first.
We did have time on the agenda for the discussion about where it stands with the motions to do the cleanup, and I think that the cleanup is critical to the election. So if there's any check-in about that, I'd like to do it.
Okay. Well, is there an objection to having maybe a five-minute check-in on the list cleanup process, and then we can, whatever time is left, go back to the cost-cutting?
That's fine.
All right. If there's no objection, then, Michael, you want to formulate the question?
Well, the question is still, we asked the PNB, and I think they did pass a motion to have the executive director instruct the general manager of each of the five stations to clean up the list based on the fundraising letters and based on, you know, a clear definition of staff and so on. And I just have no idea if any of that ever happened. I know
that's correct.
The KPFK, the staff list is still in, very sketchy condition, particularly the unpaid staff.
Okay. Margie, would you have any information on this question?
I don't. I absolutely don't. I can certainly ask. There's a regular weekly leadership call that happens on Thursday, and I can ask Bernard to raise that issue and see what the GMs and the PDs have to say about it.
Okay. Michael, can you resend to Margie the motion that was passed?
Thank you.
Okay. Richard's in a sec.
Okay, Richard, go ahead.
And Teresa.
And then Teresa.
I would agree. You guys sent that motion, and it was approved by the PNB.
Right.
Yeah, to do the cleanup the list, and that was in, like, sometime around June or July or something like that, I think.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was, I think, last July. Okay. All right, Teresa.
Here's a challenge, and I don't quite know where it fits in here, but I think it has to do with saving money. But we have a flaw in our voting in that let's say you have 9 positions, and you have, 15 candidates, and people, you know, so you have the election, and 9 people are elected, and then they resign one by one. We don't have anything that says, you know, the bottom quarter people are not elected. I mean, how do the people, if out of 10,000 members, for example, a person only gets 10 votes, aren't those members saying, we don't want this person, but we will go all the way to the bottom of the barrel before we allow the LSV to possibly fill positions on their own? I mean, I think that totally defeats the purpose of STV or any election system when you allow people to go to the very, very bottom, because how else does the electorate say, we don't want this person? I mean, even if they only have 1 vote, which is their own vote, we would go all the way down. So something needs to be done about that sometime. And, you know, maybe somebody can put their thinking cap on and figure out a solution. But I think that ultimately that does affect, you know, the cost of the election. Maybe it needs to be a bylaws amendment, or, you know, maybe something needs to be done, because I think that if you think about it, ultimately, it's a disservice to STV or any election system to allow that. Thank you.
Serene for the staff.
Go ahead. Thank
you to the staff.
Maria Elena on the set.
Okay, I got it. Yeah. Serene, go ahead.
Just 2 things in response to that. One is that I think the reason we go through the list is because someone who has been examined by the public is generally seen as more appropriate to fill a seat in the public. I'm sorry? And someone who has not put their credentials, if you will, out there to be examined by the public at all. And rather than seeing the person who receives the lowest support as someone who was rejected by the public, one can, well, for me, it is more someone who was not wanted perhaps as much as some other candidate. It's not necessarily a rejection. It's called preference ranking. So there is a preference for them, even if 1 or 2 people express that preference. It is still a preference. And it's in comparison to the other people on the ballot. It's not an absolute rejection of the individual. I just prefer to view it that way.
Okay. Was Richard next? Sorry, I wasn't sure. Did Richard ask to speak?
I asked to. No, I have Hank.
No, it's Hank. Hank and then Maria Elena. Okay, go ahead, Hank.
Okay. It's also a matter of willingness, and the fact that they ran demonstrates willingness, whereas the other 10,000 people did.
Okay, Maria Elena?
Yes. I definitely... am in consonance with Serene's analysis of exactly what this preferential single ballot voting is about, and that is it allows the electorate to express their preferences of the candidates, as opposed to any, you know, there's no inkling of rejection involved in the whole process itself. So the thing that I wanted to bring up and I'm very concerned about is this. The fact that we have, in some cases, not exhausted the stat, not exhausted the number of people who are still in line, who are candidates, but did not receive enough votes to be voted in. And yet, we have people who, there's a lot of noise on the line. I don't know who's making that noise, but I would appreciate it if they would stop making that noise. Thank you. In any event, what I was trying to say is that there are people who are now going into an unelected fourth year. There are people whose term was due to expire last fall. And because Pacifica failed to carry out its bylaws and carry out elections in that year, there are now people, and one of those persons, I won't say who, in any event, there's a number of people, including members of this committee, who are essentially exercising a fourth year for which they were not elected. And I think that we need at least to allow the local station boards to consider whether or not those fourth-year people should be replaced by somebody lower on the stack before we have the actual election in this fall, because it gives an unearned advantage of incumbency that was not won according to the bylaws. And I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying that people whose three-year term expired last fall should be removed before we have the elections this fall to allow a runner-up to take that place, so as to remove that unfair, unearned advantage of incumbency.
Okay. Was there someone else on the stack? Okay. Well,
this is Teresa. I just have to say I disagree with what she just said.
Okay.
And I'll be happy to take calls if you want me to explain it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So let's just review what we're going to do between now and the meeting on the 29th and what else we need to do. So the working group is going to come up with a timeline. I'm going to send out the RFP from 2012 so you can see what the different tasks, and it breaks it down into what we in that year visualized being the NES versus the company or nonprofit that would do the balloting tabulation, the balloting preparation and tabulation. So it would be good if people could really review that carefully and think about which things could be brought back to being under the purview of the NES or could be sourced out to some other entity that might be cheaper or even free, or, you know, just look at all those options. The other thing we didn't really discuss was the cost of electronic elections and the different options. I think Michael had said something about an opt-out, but my understanding is the PNB never determined whether it would be an opt-out or an opt-in. So that's still on the table. So is there anyone who wants to do some research before the next meeting on that whole question about electronics?
It is an opt-in. I mean, you have to say you want a paper ballot. This is Richard. I'm sorry. I'm just talking. I shouldn't have.
Okay, Richard, so it's an opt-in. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, then I stand corrected. Okay, so it's an opt-in. So, but nonetheless, we still, it would be good to research kind of what, I mean, there's always been questions swirling around electronic voting, which is around security. So, and whether it really, you know, is something that can be, like, can't be hacked, it can't be skewed in one way or another. So, is there anyone who would like to start doing some research on that?
This is Kim.
Yes.
I would just like to make a comment. It's not just the security, but it's the fact that many of our listeners, not all of our listeners, are computer savvy. I mean, that's a big issue.
Right. Okay. Well, is there anyone who wants to
Teresa
look into
for the stack?
Yes. Well, let me just ask before you speak, Teresa, is there anyone who would like to volunteer to look into this?
I think if you put this out, Janet Coburn will likely sign up, because I know that she is vehemently opposed to electronic voting, so I wouldn't be surprised if she would be interested in developing some arguments about it.
Okay.
Richard?
All right. I had Teresa and then Richard.
I'm looking at a ballot for Sierra Club. And when you get that ballot, first of all, they have a nominating committee, so you wouldn't have, you don't have like 40 candidates. You might have, I mean, and they've created a higher bar for people to even run. I mean, at our station, we have people that come into the station. I think they're supposed to get 20 signatures. And we've had parties where everybody's just expected to put their signature mm-hmm. on the list for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you have a nominating committee, you won't have quite as many candidates.
Maria Elena,
but you've had people vet them. Now we don't have that, and we're not going to have that. But the fact of the matter is that our packets with the paper. Statements and descriptions of our candidates are huge and very, very expensive. I think we've paid sometimes over $1 for each one that we send out in postage. But with the Sierra Club ballot, I think it should definitely be opt-in. We're assuming that they're going to get everything online. And it should be online so anybody can see it. I mean, surely, even if a person is not literate, they can somehow go somewhere and get online, any library, and go online and see it. And then you can opt in to get the ballot, a paper ballot, if you like. And with the ballot I have for Sierra Club, which I think is the same service with, like, ACLU, I mean, we should be able to save a lot of money, especially since we won't be sending out huge packets describing each candidate and maybe 30 or 40 candidates.
Okay, just to clarify before I call on the other folks, a point of terminology. I think people are using the term opt-in differently. My understanding is the way the PNB used it, and Richard said earlier that's what the decision was to opt in for an electronic ballot, not to opt in for a paper ballot. Richard, am I correct?
No, it's the paper. The electronic is the main way, and if you want a paper ballot, you request one. I'll send you the, and this is what I was on the stack for. I'll send you the motion. And you can send it around everybody else.
Okay. Well, you can post it to the list. Either way, that's fine. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
And who else wants to speak?
Maria Elena.
Okay, Maria Elena, and then we're at time, so go ahead.
With regard to listenership that would be capable of participating in a computer ballot, yes, there's a significant population, especially among low-income minorities and older minorities and Anglo-Americans who just are not tech-savvy, or because of the recent loss of net neutrality and the FCC's new rules that allow, you know, these private providers to increase the cost of internet service, we may find by the end of this year it's going to be very, very costly for people to take part in any kind of social media or internet kinds of balloting. We don't even know if they're going to be able to afford their internet service by the end of this year. That's how fast things are changing. And I don't know if you all have followed that FCC ruling last Thursday, but it'll not knock you out. But I wanted to point out, I just wanted to agree with Kim. We've got to consider, see how we can utilize a hybrid situation where we still provide some sort of opportunity for written ballot. Now, that would mean that management along with our volunteers would have to go to every public library, by the way, in Houston gives the public access to the internet, as well as would provide for nonprofit entities like Pacifica to carry out all sorts of assembly meetings in their conference rooms. So I just simply want to point out we're going to have to deal with these new realities that, on the one hand, are moving in the direction of limiting access to the internet, and on the other hand, are compelling us to reach out to those low-income communities that may only have access to it at public libraries, etc., in conjunction with paper ballot. That's all.
Okay. So we're past time of the meeting, so we need to adjourn. So if people can start researching some of the topics we've been discussing about electronic balloting and, cost-cutting, if you have places to outreach locally at universities or organizations of retired management people that, you know, you might check whether they're the type of organization that might provide a volunteer to do the election supervision or, you know, whatever, just whatever the local options are, so we could have a more informed discussion at the May 29th meeting. I think with that, we're going to adjourn the meeting till Thursday, May 29th.
So moved.
And thank you all, Bob, for participating. Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye. Bye.
Bob, please stay on the line for a second.
Okay.
Still there?
Yeah.